WTF is Retail, presented by Excellent Zephyr, your ERP, integration, and automation specialists.
All right, everyone, welcome back to WTF is Retail. We're here in Sook in Islington Square with someone who's actually familiar with Sook and done a pop-up in the Sook space before, but we'll get to that a little bit later. I'd like to take a moment to introduce Lucy Jeffrey, founder and CEO of Bearkind, who sell socks that save animals.
Yeah, hi, everyone.
Welcome. I'm also joined by my colleague Martin, first time on the show for him, so thanks for joining me as well, Martin.
Thank you very much for having me. It's great to be here.
Yeah, and everyone will be enjoying your lovely Scottish accent today.
Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to this one because I'm a bit of a socks guy. Today I'm wearing Australia socks, but we've actually got some Bearkind socks on the table. So you've 100% won me over with these already. So I wanted to get straight into it, really, and if you could tell us a bit about Bearkind, the story about how it started. You obviously didn't start with selling socks. It was reusable straws.
Yeah,
right?
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, story from the beginning.
Okay. So I started the company 5 years ago. I was working for a bank at the time. I was on the grad scheme. It was fine, but not really lighting any fires under me. So I wanted to start something. I didn't know what that was going to be, but it ended up being Bearkind. So there's been like a few different evolutions of Bearkind over the last 5 years. As you said, I started with reusable straws. So at the time, there was a big like revolution around using single-use plastics. And I just kind of started in the market with reusable straws, kind of drop shipping, and then, you know, bought my own stock in and kind of graduated from there. I moved on to things like recycled t-shirts, tote bags. But then I thought I wanted to do something with animal conservation. So this is where the socks come in. We donate 10% of the profits to save the animal on the sock. But the model came first. I was like, I want to donate money to animal conservation. What would be a good product to do that with? I just started with socks purely because I felt, you know, you could bring, you know, people express themselves with socks, as you can see. Like, you know, you can put out like crazy animal designs on them and it feels like quite at home. So I just started with a pair of turtle socks. That was it in 2019. And people really kind of resonated with it. They were like, what's coming next? I want this animal. I want that animal. So I then expanded the range to a further five. And it's kind of like grown from then. So yeah, as I said, that was 2019. Then obviously COVID happened. We were all working from home. But at the end of that year, I actually quit my job because we, you know, COVID just made me realize, you know, if we don't kind of grab life and just go for it, then what are we actually doing? So yeah, so I'm nearly 3 years full time on the company. And we've got so many more animals since then.
Yeah, that was sort of something that drew me into your brand, was sort of the grind from literally doing it as a bit of a side hustle, yeah, as you describe it as, to now like it's your baby, your full-time,
full-time,
you know, like,
yeah,
really going for it. And how many animals do we have now on the socks? We started with turtles. How many are there now?
There's up to 50 different designs. Some of them, the animals are repeated. So as you see here, we've got like this tiger design. It's like a new type of sock. We've started with this like pattern with the animals all over it. So tigers, we've got that one, but we've also got a tiger one in that. So 45 to 50 different designs, but there are some duplicates of animals, but it translates to about 25 different charities that we actually support. So yeah, we've really had some growth in that area.
Awesome.
Fantastic. Yeah, it's, I have to say, Lucy, I'm a huge fan of what it is that your company's up to. You know, starting your day, putting on a good pair of socks.
Right, yeah.
Feeling that, something that we all feel. And Theo mentioned that you sell socks to save animals in the intro. Could you tell us about the sustainability aspect of the brand? Because that's obviously a strong USP that you have over a lot of your competitors in the sock game.
Yeah, absolutely. We see that. There's, I mean, because at the end of the day, they're just socks. There's a lot of socks out there. So this actually really differentiates us in the market because it is really saturated. And yes, sustainability is really important for us. We're actually going for our B Corp at the moment. So I submitted maybe a month ago. So it's a very long process. So we're, you know, they haven't even got in contact with us yet. But yeah, so that's, you know, we're just trying to do everything we can. You know, the packaging is plastic free. We use sustainably sourced bamboo. I think there's a lot that can go into it. And the interesting thing with B Corp as well, it's not just the kind of eco credentials, it's things like paying living wage and, you know, having a 50% and over majority female ownership and things like that, that we actually already do. So it's actually, you know, it makes sense that we go down that path.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like you guys are already on like the right path with it. I've seen a lot of companies obviously going for B Corp as that sort of stamp of approval in the age of greenwashing, should we say.
Yeah.
But you guys like literally started with this story of wanting to do it differently, wanting to do better than a lot of fashion brands. So it makes sense if you can get that. How long does it take?
Well, I've heard like at least a year. I think the tricky part is the actual application isn't too bad. It's a massive questionnaire and you basically kind of have to just answer everything saying, yes, I do this, I don't do this. And then they'll give you a score and you need to have hit 80 points. We hit it just over 100 points. They say the more you hit, then because the point score will fluctuate when you actually go through certification, because the next step is proving it. And that's the difficult bit. Yeah. You've got to have all the documentation in place. Like they just basically can call you out on anything you've said and say, prove it. Mm-hmm. And apparently that's the long process, doing that part. But again, as you said, we've set up in this way already. So it should be fairly easy for us to get through. There's just certain stuff that, as a smaller business, it's harder for us to do the kind of tracking all the way down the supply chain and measuring all our emissions and things like that. That becomes this expense behind doing that. So we'll have to see if we can achieve that.
Yeah, awesome.
I've got a question, marketing related.
Yeah, go on.
As a brand that really started to get some traction through social media ads, how has your acquisition strategy changed over the past few years?
Yeah, it's a good question because it has changed a lot. I basically quit my job off the back of one Facebook ad. That was 2020. So that was before a lot of iOS changes came in and ruined everything. We had some really good traction just on Facebook ads, and then it's got harder and harder, and everyone is seeing that across the industry. So we've had to do a lot of different things. I think on Facebook, we're still plowing money into that and Google, and we're going more for awareness. So we're doing like 70% awareness on budget, and then the 30% is the pay-per-click. We've set like a budget per month, because last year we were just kind of all over the place with our marketing budget, and it really it was really bad for us in terms of profitability. But a really interesting one is we did radio ads last year, which is completely like very, very different from like pay-per-click marketing and the kind of tangible, like trackable, even though Facebook's hard to track these days, like radio is like, you can't attribute it. But that went really well for us. We were literally on the radio next to like Jaguar Land Rover and then the National Lottery, and then it would be like Bearkind Bamboo Socks. It was real surreal, but they went really well for us.
Awesome. And like, what's, again, I'm going to ask the process questions, he'll be a bit more creative, but like, how does someone even go about like getting in touch with the radio stations that you want? Like,
fair, they basically came to us because we, our fulfillment warehouse that we are in, they have connections in radio. So they started this like accelerator program, actually really smart from a warehouse. They've obviously realized that the more they can promote their own brands, the more money they will make because their brands are selling more. Like genius. Yeah. I know. So they've kind of started this accelerator program and through that have put us onto it. So we didn't, it was kind of managed through them. Otherwise I wouldn't really have even thought of doing radio ads at all. So that was just an opportunity we were able to jump on.
Interesting. And I wanted to touch on that. I've heard you speak quite a lot about your warehouse.
Yeah.
So why don't we, again, take a moment to talk about who they are maybe.
Yeah,
and,
sure.
And like what works for you with them.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I like shout from the rooftops about these guys. Yeah. So they're called We Are Fulfillment. They've just got a base in the UK. I've been with them for 2 years now. So since I started, my fulfillment used to be with my mum at my parents' house. Then we moved into this warehouse. We were their first brand. So we've grown with them. They've taken various types of investment now. They've expanded. They've got so many more brands. They've opened up a second location close to their home base. So they've grown a lot. But I think in terms of someone looking for a warehouse, the first thing I'd say is you probably need one sooner than you'd think. Mm-hmm. I was doing about £6,000 in sales a month when I moved into the warehouse. So not a crazy amount. But then we very quickly like racked that up after we moved into the warehouse. Last year, Christmas, we were doing over £150,000 in sales in 1 month. So you can see that kind of like scalability there. Mm-hmm. But it is a scalable like model. Because you're basically, the fixed cost is the storage. So basically you're paying as you go. So I recommend anyone to like look into a warehouse sooner than you'd think, because it's a real unlock of growth. But these guys were great because they're an independent, so they really care about what they're doing. I have a great relationship with them, always like ready to contact us. And we just have a Slack channel with them. I could pick up the phone, they'd answer. So I've heard a lot of horror stories with fulfillment warehouses. It can be like make or break a business. And I think they've been a great partner for us.
Cool. And I mean, back to the acquisition side of things, given like the cost of attaining new customers, as you mentioned. Like, a lot of emphasis has been put on customer loyalty and retention. Are there any other strategies that you guys have found to be successful in for customer retention in particular?
I think the kind of story behind our brand really helped. The way we've done our branding and our stories, because we've got this charity aspect, like we release a charity impact report every January. So we're really trying to kind of build that like strong connection with our customers. So I think when someone is loyal to our brand, they do tend to stick around. The second thing to that really is we need to have regular product releases, because otherwise there's nothing really fresh for them to get into. But it's weird for us because we're so seasonal. So 60% of our revenue comes in November and December. It's Christmas. People buy socks at Christmas. So it's a really interesting one we're having to deal with at the moment, because cash flow is then really hard to manage. So retention's a weird one, because they'll come flooding back at Christmas, but we're trying to work on it for the rest of the year. I think we need to bring in some kind of loyalty program. We don't have that at the moment, but I think it could. We need to start testing that. We're doing a lot of wholesale though, and on that side of things, we get a lot more regular retention because they're selling stuff throughout the year in their shop or whatever. And retention strategies that work on wholesale are actually just kind of like regular contact. So we'll send monthly newsletters. Sometimes it's a case of like, I'll just send a message just to check in. Mm-hmm. They might ignore my message, but they'll make an order because they're just busy business owners. They're like, oh yeah, I've remembered, place an order. It's a very different relationship with them compared to my B2C customers. But yeah, always testing stuff, because yeah, we've definitely not got it right yet.
Yeah, I guess when you can see, it must be kind of frustrating sometimes to see, oh, we're doing so well at the end of the year, and understand, of course, that's around Christmas, but also be like, how can we sort of drive a lot more traffic throughout the rest of the year, right?
Yeah, we're really thinking about it now. Like it becomes, you know, do we diversify and say set up a warehouse in Australia? So we've got Southern Hemisphere. So, you know, we swap winters basically, might help. Do we diversify into different products? Do we bring out like a summer range of something? Like you could go into swimwear or sliders. I feel like that's what other sock brands have done. If you look at Happy Socks, they sell board shorts and things like that. But the other thing we are actually doing is completely diversifying, and we're bringing out a digital course, which is completely like separate from Bearkind really. But it's the whole thing is us talking about how we've done wholesale on Bearkind, because we've gone from zero to 700 retailers in less than 18 months. Like we've grown hugely in that area, and other business owners seem to be struggling.
Yeah.
So we're like, okay, let's do a digital course teaching others how to do it. We haven't launched it yet, so we don't know how it's going to go, but hopefully that will then fund stock for Christmas.
Yeah, super cool way of thinking about it, definitely.
Yeah, let's talk sustainable animal sock big data. So how does Bearkind leverage data and analytics to optimize the e-commerce operations and drive sales growth?
I don't think we're very good at this. It's the first thing. Like, so we're a small team, so there's four of us. So I think there's, and only one person, my partner, who's recently quit his job to join, he's quite good on their kind of analytics front. So we're starting to implement it now. But really we're working with what we've got on Shopify. So we do quite a bit of like segmenting of our customer data. That's what, again, that goes back to the retention thing. We're trying to understand who our customers are a bit more. But really, and this is not my side of the business at all, the data. I'm like the kind of like creative, hopefully big picture stuff, but, so that will show now that I don't really know what we're doing in detail, other than we need to do more, because I mean, we're just as basic as sometimes we're pulling stuff out and just using Excel to just try and understand our numbers. But to be fair, that's just where you've got to start sometimes. I'm sure there's apps and things out there that would help us more with that, but we just prioritized other areas at the moment.
Yeah, I think it really ties in with the previous point you made as well, that a lot of the sales that happen for you are around Christmas festive occasions as well.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, it can be people from all different age groups that are just looking to get gifts for loved ones.
Absolutely, yeah. So it's actually quite hard to pinpoint who our customer is. We know roughly that tends to be more female, 25 to 55, typically like the gift buyers of the household. So it's like I'm picturing in my head someone like my mum who ends up buying everyone's presents. Mm-hmm. That's who we're relying on, because they'll come in and be like, great, I've got the whole family sorted in one go. That's what we're seeing. And that's the kind of behavior we're seeing at Christmas as well.
Yeah, so I guess that raises an interesting point for me on the like social side of it. For me, I would say, maybe I'm wrong, that Facebook sits quite nicely with that sort of demographic.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
TikTok ads, TikTok, social commerce, selling through Instagram, which maybe sits in a different demographic. Have you tested your toe in any of those areas, and how have they gone for you?
Yeah, we've tested it. I don't think we've tested it extensively. Okay. We have done some, we've run them ourselves, and I think for a while TikTok were like offering to throw money at us and just so we'd spend money on their ads, but we didn't get much traction. I don't think our content was good enough. Like, I don't think we've been creative enough with the ad for TikTok and what works, because what works on Facebook is very different from what works on TikTok. So I think really if we deployed an agency on this and we're like, just go wild, maybe we could get some traction. Because again, the end user of our sock could be anyone, but it's weird one to test. So it could be that we go for that younger audience and then they will ask for it for Christmas, that kind of thing. So it's a difficult one. But again, it's just a prioritization thing that we're like, we can see Facebook working, so we throw money at it. Yeah.
Interesting.
Thank you, Lucy. You guys are selling through multiple channels, including D2C, wholesale marketplaces. Do you find it difficult to manage these channels? And how do you ensure that they are properly integrated with your brands? And that's both from a data and branding perspective.
So the key one is we just have this rule that it has to integrate with Shopify. That's the key one. And like we've in the past, I've like gone out and the strategy has been go on any marketplace available that works from a profitability point of view. We've now had to scale that back because we just don't have time for it. So we've kind of honed in on the ones that actually work. I think there's one, we will go on a marketplace if they have a good offer. So this is specifically wholesale, sorry. If they have a good offer, because a lot of these marketplaces are trying to compete, so they'll throw like credit at our customers to spend on our socks. So we'll go on to that even if it's manual, because we'd be like, it'll just be like a small set of our loyal customers who want that credit. So we'll do that for them. But other than that, it is just simple as we'll only do it if it integrates with Shopify, because then it manages your inventory, pricing, like everything stays consistent. You do still have to have some kind of, you know, you've got to change the imagery and things like that across the platforms. We had a whole person in the team just doing that. So I think it's a case of like really prioritizing that. From a branding point of view, we've done a lot of exercises on this in the team. So we hired someone to come in and do workshops with us on what is our brand? What are our colors? This is, you know, and can just setting that tone. And then it's much easier to just deploy that across the team.
Interesting. What are your colors?
I can tell you like the hex codes, but we've got like, it's like our primary color is this kind of like, it's all greens basically. Okay. And it sounds groundbreaking, but like we kind of went through the whole scale of like, oh, what is Bearkind? And we came back to our mission is to save animals. Mm. Our colors are green. Like there wasn't anything particularly like new about it, but I was like, actually, I can see this now. I feel like we've solidified it. This is now consistent across every channel. And that really helped going through that process.
Cool. So you've mentioned obviously Shopify being your center point of your business in terms of owning all the data. How do you approach like pricing and the inventory side, I guess, more so the pricing when selling through multiple channels, like on the marketplaces and through wholesalers? Do they, presumably if they order in bulk, they get a discount?
Yeah.
How does that work?
So our wholesalers, yes, they get wholesale pricing. Yeah. So when, again, it's all integrated through Shopify, but we set the wholesale pricing on the platform. We've set that, we've worked out our margins and we give them a set price. And then the same with other marketplaces, things like Etsy, all integrated through Shopify. So that just makes it really easy. On the inventory side of it, that goes back to our warehouse. So they use software. So we have a complete overall view of how many socks we've got of every single SKU through this software. So I can literally just log on and see what we've got, but that connects with Shopify. So it's kind of real time updated. We just wouldn't be able to function without that. It would be too much. Because like back in the day with my mum doing it, we just now and then have to kind of pull all the socks out of the cupboards and be like, how many have we got? That's literally just how we worked. But you've got to start somewhere. But I'm just, very thankful that it's all automated now.
Yeah, for sure. And to change things up a little bit, I've heard through the grapevine that you are a bit of a master networker. And you mentioned before like the importance of sort of touching base with your wholesale clients. How do you effectively manage those relationships with wholesale partners?
I think this is something we haven't like nailed yet, because some of like they have very, very different touch points depending who they are. So I'm trying to get all of this out of my head, because the thing is really that I'm like, oh, I need to message that person, and I'll like either WhatsApp them, or I know I have their contact on Instagram, or it's an email. So I have all of this in my head that's like, I know these customers and how much they bought. So now we're trying to put that into a system, so it's not just in my head. So we use Notion for that. And what we're doing is we're trying to move to like key account management. So we have like maybe 20 accounts that we know are our like absolute like best-selling customers. They get through quite a lot of socks. And then we do a key account management on that. So that might be we touch base with them on the phone once a year. We just kind of send personalized emails. It really depends on who they are as a customer. But because there's a small segment of them, we can give that really like personalized approach. And that really drives a lot of loyalty. And then the rest of them, it's we're trying to analyze now on who is a high potential customer. So they might not have bought much yet. But we'll kind of look at them as a company and see, actually, this is a really big company we'd like to work with, or they've went with a big opening order and then have kind of disappeared. But you think, okay, there is potential there. So we're doing actually quite a bit of analysis on that to understand those segments. Mm-hmm. But actually the wholesale newsletter we do, used to do it monthly. Now we do twice a month. And that is just, that's worked really well for us because all that is about driving value. So it's not really a sales tool, even though it works as one. It's more just like, here's a charity update. Like, you know, they've saved an orphan rhino and here's, you know, oh, there are some new products if you want them, or like, here's a point of sale stand, here's a poster. Like, we're just trying to support them as much as we can. And we find that really works.
It's really interesting. Martin and I were having literally a conversation in a completely different context about partner marketing newsletters earlier this week and how you can use that. Again, it will obviously help the partner sales piece on the tech side, but realistically, if you can provide like value or interesting articles within the space that they're going to just want to look at, then their eyes are going to be on you guys, right?
Yeah.
So it's perfect.
Just be as helpful as possible, because we've tried kind of sales updates in the past or like filler emails. They just don't work. They are busy people. They just want the kind of value stuff. So we'll say something when we've got something to say. But generally now we do actually have quite a lot to say through the, and that goes back to what I said before about having regular product rhythm. Because we need, and that's actually something we've missed this year. We've dropped two new designs this year. The rest are coming in September, October, but next year we're going to move to like try and drop something, maybe just a couple of pairs every month, every other month to keep it fresh. And we've really missed out on that. So that's something we're moving to. But yeah, as you said, if you're giving them value, then they just subconsciously feel that from you, and hopefully you stay top of mind. So when they come to ordering or recommending you, then they've got like a positive view of you.
Precisely, yeah. It's all about the feel good factor.
Right, yeah.
It's something that your brand, from the looks of things, I've just saw today, but you're certainly handling tremendously well, because as we were saying with the newsletter, it's about delivering that social impact behind it as well.
Absolutely, which works really well on D2C as well. So we have a monthly newsletter there as well for our direct customers, and it works really well. They want to hear the good stuff, you know. If that's community feel, like that they're actually part of it. Like, it's just a pair of socks, but we're kind of saying it's much more than that.
Grant, now let's switch over to the marketplace side of the business. How do you view the role of online marketplaces in the overall e-commerce landscape at the moment? And what benefits does the bear kind derive from selling through these platforms?
This is like super topical, because I was at a networking event yesterday with like loads of big retailers, and part one of the roundtables was talking about marketplaces. It's becoming a huge thing because places like Next, John Lewis, like they're basically turning into marketplaces online. So I don't think, a lot of people might not realize that you go onto a website like John Lewis, you might buy a product. It's actually not coming from John Lewis or Next or whatever it is. It's coming from the brand directly. So I think it's going to be a massive, if it's not already, it's going to be a massive growth thing. And we're really looking at it, especially for trying to get into America. We're looking for a warehouse there at the moment, and we're looking at kind of different avenues out there in terms of like, how can we break America? And a marketplace is such a good way of doing that, because there's no cost of acquisition really for you, because they're doing all the marketing. It's a commission-based structure. So you pay when you make a sale most of the time. Some of them have fixed fees. So it's actually a really good way of doing it. So I used to be like this. I used to look at it and think 20, 25% commission, you're taking the piss. Like that's a lot of money. But when you look at your acquisition cost on Facebook, that can sometimes be a lot higher percentage. But you're guaranteed a sale when you're paying commission because you made a sale, right? So I think that, it's a real massive part of our brand strategy this year.
Awesome. And if there's any Americans listening, when can they expect like to be able to really get their hands on Bear Kind socks?
Oh, it really depends how this warehouse search goes, but we could turn around quite quickly, because realistically, and the reason I haven't done it in the past is because I've been worried about splitting stock. But we're actually really overstocked at the moment. So we could turn around in like a couple of months and have some stock. I don't think it'll be the full range yet, but we could have some out there. So yeah, watch this space, could be happening this year, but I said that last year and it didn't happen. So no
exciting
promises.
Times. Exciting times anyway. Awesome. And what marketplaces are you currently utilizing in the UK and Europe? Maybe if there are some.
Mainly wholesale ones. We are on Etsy for D2C. I'm pretty sure that's our Social Supermarket is another one in the UK. I think that's smaller than Etsy, but they kind of working with like social cause brands. So it's quite cool. But then the other ones that we've done really well on are these wholesale marketplaces. So Fair is a huge one, like massive. And that's a lot of our digital course I mentioned is going to be talking about how we've grown on there. Cause we've done like 150K. If not more on sales, just on that one platform. And it's grown hugely. And then the second one is Anchor Store, which is another wholesale one. And that's mainly European based. So we get a lot of French orders, German orders from there, which is quite cool. So it's, you know, we're trying to get this geographical reach.
Fantastic. Really, really interesting as well. And going towards the specifics of the marketplaces, what selection criteria do you use when you're picking a marketplace partner?
Yeah. So as I said, the main one is this Shopify integration, just because it makes it so much easier for us. Because if they don't have that, you have to literally manually upload everything. Like we've got too many SKUs to do that now. So it's the Shopify thing. That's the main one, really. Because at that point, yeah, it's depending on their commission structure, we'd assess the profitability of it. So as long as we can afford to sell on that platform, we will go for it. Yeah, that's it really. Like as long as, and then you'll just test it. They're kind of risk free really, because most of them you don't have a cost until you've made a sale. So always happy to try out a new one, but Fair really is dominating at the moment. It's a huge platform.
What's the highest commission you've seen some of them charging? You don't have to name who it is, but like,
yeah.
I'm sure that it varies. You know, what sort of range are we talking? You mentioned around 20, 25 typically, right?
Yeah. So there is one that I'd seen that was 30% and I said no, because it just felt too high compared to the rest of the market. They didn't seem that big a player. So I said no. Fair, they sit at, and this is how typically they work. So they sit at 25% for a new customer acquired through their marketplace. So someone who's found us because of the platform, but any reorder is 15%. So if they keep coming back, it's actually quite affordable. But any customer we bring to the platform, so we put all our customers into Fair, 0% commission forever. So it kind of, if you take into account that, and we do a lot of acquisition, so we'll go to, you know, find a retailer and say, great, want to buy our socks? Use this platform. That's 0% commission. So when you look at the blended commission, when you're mixing everyone up, it's much, much lower. We're hitting like 4 to 10% total.
Awesome. That's super cool when you can average it out. And it's actually,
exactly,
like you said, it's not that expensive.
No.
If you can hit your targets.
I think people see the 25% and get scared, but it's much more affordable. When you put the effort into the acquisition, it's a much more affordable way of doing it.
Awesome. So I wanted to change things up a bit. And before we wrap up, just sort of make something a bit more fitting for season 2 of WTF is Retail, obviously sponsored by Souq. We're in one of the fantastic spaces at the moment. As we mentioned, you had some experience in a pop-up with Souq previously because of a competition run by Adobe and Enterprise Nation.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a bit about that firstly, and then about your overall experience in the shop?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, so that was in May we did the pop-up. So the competition was released maybe like a month or two before, and it was to win the competition, you had to build a website page using Adobe Express. So there's a girl in my team who is particularly gifted with her kind of creation and design. So we gave that task to her and she built this beautiful page, like, you know, all about the socks and the brand. We got shortlisted and then won a space in the shop for 2 days on Oxford Street. So busiest shopping street in Europe, right? Huge opportunity. I was actually abroad when it happened.
Oh,
this is the thing. So I was in Australia. My partner's Australian, so we spend quite a lot of time out there. And so it came in to say, yep, you've got like basically like 3 weeks until the pop-up. So I was like, okay, guys, right, we need to get our shit together. So thankfully, Jess, the lady who did the website design, was in the UK and was happy to kind of come down and run the shop for me. And my best mate also chipped in. So very lucky to have reliable people that could jump in for me. So I was kind of like managing that remotely. They had an awesome experience in the shop. Really cool, like busy. And we learned a lot from it, I think. We noticed that it's London, right? So there's a lot of footfall, but not necessarily all coming into the shop. So that's, I feel like there's quite a few techniques I'd try if we did it again. But interestingly, our conversion rate for anyone that came into the shop was really high. So people that came in were quite likely to buy, which seems a positive thing. So I think we will actually try and do some kind of pop-up retail thing in the future. It's really inspired me to give it a go. I think it was also a weird time of year because it's May. So typically not a big sock selling period for us. And it was a few days before payday as well. So I think we try and do something around Christmas time, pop up in like a, maybe it's like a slightly less busy location. Cause I think people in Oxford Street are just so busy and ready to kind of just get on with their day and they might be shopping, but I think we might even do outside of London. I don't think it has to be like the busiest capital to be successful.
Yeah. And I think you touched on an interesting point there. Like there's so many things to consider, right? Like payday a couple of days before that, yeah. I guess that's the reason that Sukk even exists in the first place is we're talking about picking when you want to trade, right? So you can literally pop up for the first few days of the month, for example, if you wanted to, or you know, if you wanted to be just on the weekends or stuff like that. So shout out to Sukk. It's got to be done. To wrap us out, wanted to ask what your favorite retail brand to shop at is. And it can't be Bear Kind.
It can't, yeah. But yeah, the only one. I had to really think about this. And it's actually topical because I was reading an article about them this morning. But Tony's Chocolonies, they're the chocolate. They're like super ethical with their approach. And they've just come out to say that they're doing these like golden shareholder things where they kind of lock in, I think it's three shareholders who have kind of absolute say on like the governance of the company. So if someone was to say, I don't think this is an ethical approach in where the company is going, they can anonymously raise it with those like golden shareholders and they have like the absolute like say to say. And actually they can like, if they're not happy with the approach the company's taking, the article was literally saying that they can publish it in the company's annual report or in a news article. They can literally just dob the company in to say that you are not, you know, we have not agreed on this approach. So they're kind of like locking down to say, we are guaranteeing the ethical nature of the future of the company, which I've not seen before. I don't know if that's ever been done. Really cool. I was like, that's amazing. And I just love seeing this kind of like innovation in business that we don't have to just accept the norms of what business is now. So yeah, really incredible from them. And also fantastic chocolate.
awesome. And if people want to find more about Bear Kind, where can they do so?
Yeah, so we're bearkind.com online and we're Bear Kind on all your social media. So Instagram, Facebook, the digital course and everything we do our own podcast talking about the business and how it's going. That's all on Bear Kind on YouTube. So just search Bear Kind. That's B-A-R-E rather than B-E-A-R, the animal. And yeah, and hopefully you'll hear us in radio ads again this year.
Awesome. And as we just mentioned, thank you to our sponsors, Sukk, for sorting us out with this amazing spot. And if you want to find out more about us, Excellent Zephyr, you can do so at excellentzephyr.com. See you next time on WTF is Retail.
WTF is Retail, presented by Excellent Zephyr, your ERP, integration, and automation specialists.